Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. I'm your host, Crimeaholly. If you can't tell from the title of this episode, today's case is an unsolved case. And while I know many people don't love when podcasters cover unsolved cases because they lack the closure, I feel that it's necessary to continue to share these stories because they lack closure. These families deserve answers, and they deserve to be able to get justice for their loved one. And because of that, I will continue to sprinkle in unsolved cases into my lineup. Today's case is tough because there is very minimal information. But despite that, I feel like it's just as important to share because someone knows something. It just takes one person to realize that they hold a key piece of information to come forward and blow this case or any case wide open. Maybe someone who listens to this episode or see it shared on social media will finally feel compelled to come forward with things that they've been holding on to for a very long time. You truly never know who might stumble upon this and finally help bring answers to a family who has been hurting for far too long. I want to mention briefly that the majority of my information for this episode came from a journalist named Caitlin Farmer, who had the opportunity to interview the victim's son. I will link that article in the description of this episode for anyone interested in reading further. So without further ado, let's get into the details of the murder of Faye Dollar. Faye Jackson Dollar was born on March 8, 1942 in Madison, Georgia, where she was the youngest of nine children. She attended Fort Valley State College as well as Atlanta University, and it was there at Atlanta University that she would be introduced to a man named Donald Dollar. Because there is such limited information out there, I don't have much to share about Faye's early years or things that she enjoyed, which I really hate because I always like to give you guys the history and the backstory on the people that I cover so that they become a real person to you and are more than just what happened to them. Unfortunately, though, that's not possible because the information about her is just not readily available. I will say, though, that from the few brief things that I did read, Faye was known to be a very loving wife and mother to her two sons named Chad and Cameron. Faye started her teaching career in 1972 at Riverwood High School, but would eventually move to Feldwood High School in College Park, where she taught math. Faye's students all loved her, and she was very well-liked by her coworkers. She was very passionate about being a mentor for her students and helping them learn a subject that can be extremely challenging for some people. From the sounds of it, it seems like she had a big and compassionate heart. Donald also worked at a high school, and he worked at Douglas High School, where he was the head coach of the basketball team. This was a job that he had been holding for a good chunk of time, and he was very well known because the school had several successful years at basketball. So he was just this very well known and respected person within the community. As time went on, the marriage between Faye and Donald deteriorated, and they eventually got divorced in September 1980. After the divorce was finalized, it appears that Faye was given custody of the children, but I do think that Donald was still involved with the kids. Maybe they were just kind of more with her, but would still see him. That's at least kind of what I've pieced together, but it does seem like Faye had the majority of the custody in this agreement. Faye and the two boys were living in a home at 378 King Henry Street in Atlanta. Now, the divorce between her and Donald was finalized in September, and unfortunately, 2 months later, Faye would lose her life. Again, I have extremely limited information on this case, and there isn't any solid information about Faye and Donald's relationship. I did, however, see one thing that stated that after the divorce, she confided in people like her family and friends, telling them that he wasn't very nice to her and that through their entire divorce proceedings, he was treating her poorly and was acting like a bully. It was also reported that the police had been called to the home several times for domestic disputes and that their divorce process had been a really messy and bitter one. Now, I will say that this could absolutely be just hearsay. There is no concrete information on this, and so I'm just kind of taking this with a grain of salt and not putting too much stock into it. However, it is something that popped up when I was looking at all of the information, so I just wanted you guys to kind of be aware of that. Now, in the interview the journalist did with Chad, he didn't mention anything like bad between him and his parents. He talked very highly about his father and how he handled him and his younger brother when growing up. He could have been just too young to fully understand, or maybe it just wasn't what it was made out to be. Divorce in general can be bitter and messy, as I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, and I'm sure Donald and Faye were no different. After the divorce was finalized in September, it seemed like things settled down. Faye and the boys were living in that house off of King Henry Street. She was still working, and all seemed to be normal for the 38-year-old, now single mother. On the night of November 30th, 1980, Faye did her normal nighttime routine with her boys, who were 8 and 4 years old. She tucked them in, kissed them goodnight, and told them that she would see them in the morning. And the events that happened after that are really unknown. The following morning, the two boys woke up and went to look for their mother, but she was nowhere to be found. They checked all of the normal places, including her bedroom, bathroom, kitchen, and even looked out front and noticed that her gold 1972 Monte Carlo was gone. They were completely home alone. They knew that wasn't right, so they called their dad to tell him that they didn't know where mom was and that they were home alone and she didn't leave a note behind. Donald also knew that this wasn't right and that though he and Faye had their differences, she was a loving, dedicated, and devoted mother who wouldn't just leave her kids. So he called the Atlanta Police Department and reported her as missing. They responded right away and went over to Faye's house and began their search. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary within the home, and the boys had even said that all was well before they went to bed that night. And when asked what she had been wearing, they said that Faye had on a red dress. When looking through her bedroom, nothing appeared to have been taken. All of her clothing was there, her jewelry was left behind, her coat was there, and it appeared that wherever Faye had gone, she wasn't planning to be gone long at all. So this was completely out of the norm for her. And to make matters worse, Faye didn't show up to work, and that was also very unlike her. She had never no-called, no-showed in the 13 years that she had been working at the school, so clearly something was amiss here. With all that they knew, the police felt that it was likely that Faye was met with foul play, and they released a bolo for Faye and her gold Monte Carlo. Donald provided the police with anything and everything that he could to help assist, including the license plate number of her car. However, unbeknownst to Donald and the police department, he had provided them with the wrong license plate number, and this potentially cost them time. On December 4th, after the bolo had been updated with the correct information, an officer was making his normal rounds on his shift. He passed through the Admiral Benson Inn parking lot, which is located about 11 miles from Faye's home. He spotted a gold-colored Monte Carlo, and after checking the plate against the updated plate information they now had, he realized that he had just found Faye's car. He called it in, and investigators arrived on scene to process the car and see what they could find. I couldn't find any reports of anything suspicious outside of the car. It didn't seem to be damaged or broken in any kind of way. So I'm assuming from the outside, it appeared that the car had just been abandoned there. Now, this inn did have security that monitored the area and did their own rounds to check what cars and stuff were in the parking lot. According to them, their last check was 2 days prior, and they said that when they did that check, they don't remember the car being there. The police also started asking those who were at the inn if they had seen the car, and the residents said that they didn't recall seeing the car even earlier on that day, on December 4th, leaving the investigators to believe that the car had only been in the parking lot for a few hours. When checking the logs for the hotel, Faye wasn't checked into any of the rooms, and nobody staying there had seen or heard anything unusual. So it seemed like her car was just abandoned there for no rhyme or reason. The authorities went ahead and brushed the car for fingerprints and started to collect what evidence they could. They also called in a wrecker truck to have the car towed back to the station for an even bigger deep dive of it. And when the wrecker company got there, the authorities asked them to try and pry the trunk open because it had been locked and they've been unable to get inside. This was a pretty easy task for them, and the trunk was quickly pried open, and that is when they made a gruesome discovery. 4 days after 38-year-old Faye Dollar was reported missing, her car was found at the Admiral Benson Inn in southwest Atlanta, Georgia. When the trunk was popped open by the wrecking company that was called in to assist the police, they found Faye Dollar's body lying face down on top of the spare tire, completely nude. Faye's hair had also been pinned up in curlers, leading the investigators to believe that she likely had been prepping for bed when she left the home to run an errand or was forced from her home if someone had broken in. It also appeared that Faye's body had been inside of the trunk for an extended period of time due to the markings and things that they found on her. The articles also state that Faye still had on her gold necklace that she always wore. And I'm not sure if this is mentioned in the articles to show that theft wasn't a motive or what exactly, but I did want to mention that she still had that on. She had a wound to her head, but at that time when they popped the trunk open, they weren't sure how it happened. When spreading their search further, they also located some of Faye's personal belongings not far away. Her body was sent off for an autopsy, and it was determined that Faye had died from blunt force trauma to the head. She had been struck on the left side of her head by something incredibly hard, and the medical examiner also determined that she had been deceased for several days before being found. The biggest question I have here is, where had this car been before being dropped off at the inn? I mean, it obviously could have been overlooked and had been there the entire time, but I feel like with so many people questioned about it and nobody seeing it prior to it literally being found, it really does make me believe it's a big possibility that it was dumped there just hours before being found. Nobody saw anything out of the ordinary that day. Nobody saw any suspicious activity. They didn't see the car being dropped off. There were no eyewitnesses to anything, which is so frustrating because we don't know if this was a single person that did this to her and they walked away on foot, or did somebody pick this person up from the inn, meaning potentially that more people know what happened and can come forward with information if it weighs heavy enough on their hearts. There's just so many questions and possibilities, and we know nothing. This inn was also surrounded by several large highways, so the car easily could have been dumped there, and the person could be back on the highway in a split second if someone had picked them up from there. Another thing that I find frustrating with this case is the medical examiner was able to determine what Faye had been struck with, but they have never publicly released that information. While I get wanting to protect the integrity of the case and withhold some information, what if this item had been dumped along the road? If people knew what the murder weapon was, they could have been more on the lookout for it. Instead, whatever this item was, whether it be a tire iron, bat, a large rock, whatever else, it could have been picked up and thrown away if found. Or someone might have this stashed away somewhere in their home and someone else could find it. I just feel like maybe it would have been more beneficial to release that information eventually, but here we are. So obviously, given that Faye and her husband Donald had just went through their divorce and the things I mentioned earlier about their relationship kind of being rocky, he was brought in for questioning. Right off the bat, many people believed he was involved, including those within the public. As true crime sleuths, we know that a lot of times the people involved in crimes are close to home. According to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, 76% of female murders and 56% of male murders were perpetrated by someone known to the victim. And with watching enough true crime shows and listening to podcasts, we know that 50% of female victims were killed by intimate partners. So naturally, the police and local community members zeroed in on Donald. A lot of people speculated that maybe the wrong license plate number was given initially to throw off the investigation and prolong her being found. Donald, on the other hand, made public statements pretty much acknowledging how it looked to Faye's friends and family. He acknowledged that Faye had spoken poorly about him and how he treated her during their divorce, but he maintained that he did nothing to Faye and remained cooperative with police. There is also claims that he took a polygraph test, but I didn't find any answers on whether he passed it or if it was inconclusive. And the police never named him as a suspect or a person of interest. But in the eyes of the public, they thought he was involved and made his life hell. Donald became a target, and at this point, with the passing of their mother, the boys now lived with their father. He really started to fear for their safety and for his own safety as well. He repeatedly got nonstop threatening phone calls, and people who he thought were friends and even co-workers of his started to treat him differently, and they became wary of him. Obviously, we don't know what happened to Faye. This case is unsolved. He could have very well been involved. But given the police never publicly naming him as a person of interest, makes me feel like he wasn't involved. Here he is, left to piece together his life and his children's lives, all while being shamed publicly pretty much by almost everyone. This sort of makes me think of the Sherry Papini case, where everyone swore up and down that her husband did something to her. People were so nasty to that man, calling and making death threats, saying things in public to him while his children were present. And here he was just trying to find his wife and protect and care for his kids. Of course, we know that Sherry faked the entire thing, but I couldn't imagine trying to do the right thing and having the public treat me that way. Again, though, this is an open case and anything is possible, and I don't believe Donald or anyone else has been ruled out. I just feel had the police thought that he was involved with something that happened to her, they would have named him as a person of interest or a suspect, but again, he never was. Unfortunately, though, this case has gone cold. I think those who were investigating the case back in 1980 did the best that they could with the techniques and technology that they had for that time, but it led them nowhere. And now it's going to really take someone coming forward to help get closure. According to that article I mentioned earlier from Caitlin Farmer, a childhood friend of Faye's son, Chad, called him up to tell him that while in prison, he saw his mom's picture on a set of playing cards. These cards are known as cold case cards, where they take pictures from unsolved murders and missing persons cases and put them on playing cards, and then they are given to the prisons. The goal with these cards is to generate leads or to get people talking. I think it's a very creative way to get more eyes on these unsolved cases, and this is done throughout the country in many different prisons. I feel like this case just needs one really big push to get things rolling again, whether it's someone coming forward, a new media push to get the information out there, something needs to be done. It's been at a standstill for far too long. Given how much time has passed, there has to be someone out there somewhere that knows what happened. Whoever was involved could have slipped up and said something by now. These people just need to do the right thing and come forward. Faye's boys had to grow up and live their lives without their mom. Though I know Chad said Donald did the best that he could, she should have been there and someone took that opportunity to raise her children away from her. If you or anyone you know has information about the unsolved murder of Faye Dollar, you can contact the Atlanta Police Department at 404-614-6544. She deserves justice. Crimesters, that is all the information that I have for you guys, unfortunately. Thank you so much for joining me today and listening to Faye's story. Every listen, every share could potentially help. Make sure that you are a part of my private Facebook group by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all information and pictures pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage all members to share all things true crime. I am also over on Instagram if you want to give me a follow at CrimeaHolly. Over there, I share my daily life as well as true crime updates. And if you would like more true crime content, you can follow me over on TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. That is all that I have for you guys today. I will be back next week with an all new episode. But in the meantime, always remember to be aware and take care. Bye-bye.